Hey guys, this is Vyom Joshi with Superior North. Welcome back to my channel. Today we will be talking about a stock that was suggested by a subscriber. That stock is called AT&T. AT&T is one of the world's largest telecom carrier and is the largest carrier in the United States. Today we will be reviewing AT&T's 10K, primarily looking at its operating segments. Then we'll review the company's key ratios, perform a discounted free cash flow DCF analysis to find the intrinsic value of the company, and finally do an expected rate of return calculation to see if you were to invest in AT&T at the current stock price, what kind of return can we expect on this investment? So let's dive in and review AT&T. Hey guys, let's start off by looking at the Form 10K, which is the annual report that AT&T filed with the SEC. On page 6 of the report, we can see the four core operating segments that AT&T reports in. The first operating segment is its communication segment, which provides services to businesses and customers located in the United States and businesses globally. This segment consists of three business units. The first business unit is the mobility unit, which provides nationwide wireless services and equipment. The second business unit is its entertainment group, which provides video, including over-the-top OTT services, internet and voice communication services to residential customers. And the last unit is the business wireless unit, which provides advanced IP-based services. The second operating segment is its Warner Media segment, which develops, produces, and distributes featured films, television, gaming, and other content over various physical and digital formats. This operating segment consists of three business units as well. The first business unit is the Turner unit, which primarily operates multi-channel based television network and digital properties. The second business unit is its home box office unit, which consists of premium paid television and OTT and streaming services. And the last one is the Warner Bros. Business unit, which consists of production, distribution, and licensing of television programming and featured films. The third operating segment is its Latin America segment, which provides entertainment and wireless services outside the United States. This operating segment consists of two business units. The first one is the Mexico unit, which provides wireless services and equipment to customers in Mexico. And the Vrio business unit provides video services primarily to residential customers in Latin America and the Caribbean. The fourth and last operating segment is its Xandr segment, which provides advertising services. Now let's look at how much revenue and operating income is generated within each one of these four operating segments. Over here, AT&T gives us an idea of the revenue that's being generated within each operating segment, as well as business units within those segments. Additionally, when we look at the revenue being generated from each operating segment to that of the total revenue, we can see that the communications segment brings in the lion's share of the company's revenue. About $142 billion of the total $184 billion of revenue comes from its communications segment. Now let's look at each business segment's operating margin. The operating margin compares the company's operating income to its revenue. This number gives an idea of how much money is left over with the company once it has paid for the cost of goods sold and its operating expenses. We can see that the communications segment's operating margin is at 22.64%. Warner Media's operating margin is at 27.35%. The Latin America segment reported a loss. That would mean that the operating margin is going to be negative. And the Xandr segment has an operating margin of about 65.18%. We can see that the company's overall operating margin is about 22.75%. So what this means is every $100 that the company makes in sales, by the time it pays for its cost of goods and operating expenses, it has about $22.75 left. And from those $22.75, the company can then pay interest on its debt obligations, pay down its debt, pay taxes, pay dividends to its shareholders, and so forth. Finally, let's look at the revenue and the fixed asset breakdown based on geographic locations. We can see that about 89% of AT&T's total revenue comes from the United States. And when we look at the net property, plant, and equipment, we can see that majority of AT&T's investment is in the United States. About 94% of AT&T's plant, property, and equipment is within the United States. This goes to show that even though AT&T is considered a global company, it has a big exposure to the US market since majority of its revenue and investments are located in the United States. Now that we have a better understanding of the company's operating segments, let's review the fundamentals by going over the key ratios. Hey guys, I'm on Morningstar looking at AT&T. Under key ratios are the financials. The first item on the list is the revenue. The revenue is the top line of the income statement. This number tells us how much money the company has made from its sales. We can see that back in 2010, the company's revenue was about $124 billion. For the year 2019, it was about $181 billion. And for the trailing 12 months, it's about $172 billion. We can see that over the past 10 years, the company's revenue has been trending upwards. Next is the operating income. The operating income is the amount of money that's left with the company once it has paid for the cost of goods and operating expenses. We can see that back in 2010, the company's operating income was about $19.5 billion. For the year 2019, it was about $29.4 billion, and for the trailing 12 months, it's about $26.4 billion. Similar to the revenue, the company's operating income has been trending upwards for the past 10 years. This is a good sign because it tells us that the company is able to keep its cost of goods as well as its operational expenses in check. Next, looking at the net income. The net income is the amount of money that's left with the company once it has paid for its cost of goods, operational expenses, non-operational expenses, interest on its debt obligations, and taxes. We can see that back in 2010, the company's net income was about $19.8 billion. For the year 2019, it was about $13.9 billion, and for the trailing 12 months, it was about $11.1 billion. Unlike the 10-year trend of the revenue and operating income, the net income's trend does see some peaks and valleys. This goes to show that the company has some non-operational income or expenses that are being injected into the company's income statement, which is helping the company either inflate its net income or deflate it. For example, when a company sells its discontinued or non-operational assets, it would help increase the company's net income. This is an example right here in 2017 when we see that the operating income is at $23.8 billion, but the net income turns out to be $29.45 billion. What this means is the company most likely made a one-time sale in 2017, which helped increase its net income. Next, looking at the dividends per share, we can see that back in 2010, the company paid out about $1.69 per share as dividend. For the trailing 12 months, the company paid $2.08 per share as dividend. We can see that over the past 10 years, the company has always paid its dividend. In fact, it has hiked its dividend every year for the past 10 years. This is certainly something that we want to see as shareholders. We want to be invested in companies that are paying consistent dividend, and it's even better if they're hiking those dividends. Next, looking at the shares outstanding, we can see that back in 2010, the company had about 5,938 million shares outstanding. And for the trailing 12 months, the company had 7,225 million shares outstanding. Over the past 10 years, the company has issued more shares. This means that the company is diluting the existing shareholders' ownership within the company. Ideally, we want to see the company buying back its shares, in which case the company's shares outstanding would be decreasing. However, in AT&T's case, it appears that the company has been doing some equity financing, which is causing its shares outstanding numbers to increase. Next is the book value. The book value is what we get when we subtract the company's total liabilities from its total assets. Back in 2011, the company's book value was at $19 per share, and for the trailing 12 months, it's about $25 per share. The book value per share trend for the past 10 years has been trending upwards. This goes to show that either the company has been decreasing its liabilities or increasing its assets. And finally, looking at the free cash flow. The free cash flow is what we get when we subtract capital spending from the company's operating cash flow. Back in 2010, the company had about $15.463 billion in its free cash flow. And for the year 2019, the company had $29.233 billion for its free cash flow. I will be using the past 10 years of free cash flows for my expected rate of return calculation. And I will be using the trailing 12-month figure of $28.116 billion for my discounted free cash flow DCF analysis. Ideally, we want to see a company's free cash flow to be positive and staying steady or increasing. And that is certainly the case with AT&T's free cash flow. Now let's look at the profitability of the company. Over here, we will be focusing on the company's net margin. Back in 2010, the company's net margin was at 15.98%. For the year 2019, it was at 7.67%. So in year 2019, every $100 that AT&T made in sales, by the time it paid for its costs, expenses, interest obligations, taxes, it had about $7.67 left as pure profit. Ideally, we want to see the company's net margin to be steady or increase over a 10-year period. AT&T's net margin is fairly comparable to that of its competitors such as T-Mobile and Verizon. Next, looking at the return on equity. The return on equity compares the company's net income to its shareholders' equity. Warren Buffett prefers to only invest in securities that have a return on equity of 8% or greater every year for the past 10 years. Back in 2010, AT&T's return on equity was at 18.6%. For the year 2019, it's at 7.55%, and for the trailing 12 months, it's at 6.11%. We can see that for 6 of the past 10 years, AT&T's return on equity was greater than 8%. Now, if you compare this return on equity to that of Verizon, you'll notice that Verizon's return on equity is a lot higher. This is because Verizon is very debt heavy and leveraged, and its equity portion is so tiny that you'll see these inflated return on equity numbers. However, since AT&T is not top heavy, we see rather subpar return on equity numbers when compared to that of a competitor such as Verizon. Next, looking at the return on invested capital, this number gives us an idea of how good the management is at investing the company's capital and getting a return on that investment. We can see that back in 2010, the company's return on invested capital was at 12.4%, and for the year 2019, it was at about 6%. AT&T's return on invested capital for the recent years have been lower than its competitors. And finally, looking at the interest coverage, the interest coverage compares the company's income to its interest obligations. This number gives an idea of how many times can the company pay off its interest obligations using its income. Back in 2010, the company's interest coverage was about 7 times. That means that the company could pay off its interest obligations 7 times using its 2010 income. Back in 2019, that interest coverage was about 3 times, and for the trailing 12 months, it was about 2.96 times. The interest coverage that we see for AT&T is comparable to its competitors. Now let's look at the financial health of the company. Looking at the liquidity measures, the first item on the list is the current ratio. The current ratio compares the company's current assets to its current liabilities. Ideally, we want to see this ratio to be greater than 1. However, over the past 10 years, there hasn't been a single year when AT&T's current ratio was greater than 1. This tells us that the company always had more current liabilities than its current assets. This means that either the company had to sell some of its non-operational assets or do some financing in order to generate the liquidity needed to fulfill its current obligations. Next is the financial leverage. The financial leverage compares the company's total assets to its shareholders' equity. And as we know, total assets are equal to total liabilities plus shareholders' equity. So the bigger this ratio, the more amount of assets are being financed through liabilities. We can see that back in 2010, the company's financial leverage was at 2.4, and for the latest quarter, it's at 3.07. Finally, looking at the debt to equity ratio, this number compares the company's total debt to its shareholders' equity. Ideally, we want to see this number to be less than 1. Back in 2010, the company's debt to equity ratio was at 0.53, and for the latest quarter, it's at 1. What this means is for the latest quarter, the amount of company's total debt is the same as its shareholders' equity. We compare AT&T's debt to equity and the financial leverage to that of its competitors such as Verizon. We'll notice that Verizon is a lot more leveraged than AT&T. It's good to see that AT&T, unlike its competitor Verizon, is not taking on more debt in order to finance its growth. Now let's look at the efficiency ratios. The first item on the list is the day sales outstanding. This number gives an idea of how many days go by from the day AT&T recognizes its sales to the day it actually receives cash. Back in 2010, AT&T's day sales outstanding were at about 42 days, and for the year 2019, it was about 49 days. For the trailing 12 months, that number was about 45 days. What this means is it takes AT&T about 45 days from the day it recognizes its sales to the day it actually receives cash on hand. Next, looking at the day's inventory, we can see that we don't have any day's inventory numbers for AT&T, and that is because 90% of AT&T's revenue comes from its services. So when you look at AT&T's balance sheet, there won't be an item for its inventory because it's so insignificant. And that is why we don't have any numbers for its day's inventory, because we don't have the inventory to compute it. After that, looking at the payables period, this number gives an idea of how many days does AT&T take to pay its suppliers. Back in 2010, AT&T took about 52 days to pay its suppliers. For the trailing 12 months, that number is about 200 days. We can see that over the past 10 years, the payables period have been increasing. This means that AT&T has been taking longer and longer to pay its suppliers, which in a way means that the company is able to efficiently allocate capital for about 200 days before it has to pay its suppliers. But at the same time, it could also mean that the company is artificially inflating its operating cash flow by holding on to the cash and not paying its suppliers. Now let's compare the company's current valuations to that of the S&P 500. The first item on the list is the price to earnings ratio. AT&T has a PE of 19.2, whereas S&P 500 is at 28.3. AT&T's price to book is at 1.2, whereas S&P 500 is at 4.0. Next is price to sales. AT&T is at 1.2, whereas S&P 500 is at 2.8. After that, looking at price to cash flow, AT&T is at 4.6, whereas S&P 500 is at 16.5. And finally, looking at the dividend yield, AT&T has a dividend yield of 7.2%, whereas S&P 500 is at 1.6%. We can see that on all these valuation metrics, AT&T is undervalued when compared to the S&P 500. Hey guys, now let's look at the discounted free cash flow DCF analysis for AT&T. Over here, I pasted the trailing 12-month free cash flow number that I got from Morningstar, which is $28,116 million. I'm using an annual growth rate of free cash flow to be 3%. That means that I want AT&T's free cash flow to grow at 3% every year for the next 10 years. I'm using a discount rate of 10%. What this means is I want this investment to give me a 10% return. I'm using a long-term growth rate of 2%. And what this means is from the 10-year mark into perpetuity, I expect AT&T's free cash flow to grow at 2% every year. I have 7,225 million shares outstanding for AT&T, and the long-term debt is at $149,437 million. I got this number from AT&T's balance sheet. After taking all of these inputs into account, we get the intrinsic value to be about $30.98 per share. When we compare this intrinsic value to that of the current stock price, which is at $29 per share, we can see that the current stock is currently trading about 6% below its intrinsic value. The way we calculate this intrinsic value is we look at what the free cash flows will be every year for the next 10 years. We sum up all those free cash flows, which come out to about $199 billion. Then we look at what the free cash flows will be from the 10-year mark into perpetuity and sum up all those free cash flows to get the total intrinsic value to be about $373 billion. From this number, we subtract the long-term debt and divide by the shares outstanding to get the intrinsic value per share to be about $31. Now, if we disregard the perpetuity component, in other words, if we think that AT&T's free cash flow will only grow for the next 10 years and then stop growing, then we get the intrinsic value without the perpetuity component to be about $7 per share. And finally, if we disregard the debt and the perpetuity, in other words, if we just look at free cash flows, forget about the debt, forget about AT&T growing past the 10-year mark, we get the intrinsic value without the debt and perpetuity component to be about $27.6 per share. Hey guys, now let's look at the expected rate of return calculation for AT&T. Over here, I based it the past 10 years of free cash flows that I got from Morningstar. This is the yearly free cash flow trend that we get. As we can see, the free cash flows every year have been positive and trending upwards. For the future data and predictions, I'm assuming that there's a 35% likelihood that AT&T's free cash flow will grow at 3%. There's a 50% likelihood that AT&T's free cash flow will grow at 1%. And a 15% likelihood that its free cash flow will decline at 5%. These are the potential free cash flow arrays that we get into the future. When we take into account the numbers of shares outstanding, which is 7,225 million shares, at the current stock price of about $29 per share, we can expect to get a return of about 11.5% if we hold the security through 2033. What this means is, if we were to buy the security at the current stock price of about $29 per share, we can expect to get a return of about 11.5%. Hey guys, now let's wrap it all up. We saw that AT&T's revenue and operating income for the past 10 years have been trending upwards. The net income, on the other hand, did see some peaks and valleys over the past 10 years. We saw that AT&T not only paid out consistent dividend, but also hiked its dividend every year for the past 10 years. We saw that AT&T's return on equity was lower than its competitive Verizon. This is because AT&T has a large equity portion, making it less leveraged than its competitors. When we looked at the current ratio, we saw that AT&T had more current liabilities than its current assets every year for the past 10 years. When we focused on the financial leverage and debt to equity ratio, we noticed that AT&T is a lot less levered than its competitors. This is a good sign because leverage and debt definitely makes a company less agile, and AT&T is far superior in that regard. We also saw that AT&T's interest coverage was comparable to its competitors. Next, when we compared AT&T's current valuation to that of S&P 500, we saw that on all the valuation metrics, AT&T was undervalued to the S&P 500. After that, when we performed the discounted free cash flow DCF analysis, we found out that AT&T's intrinsic value comes out to about $31 per share. And when we compare that intrinsic value to the current stock price of about $29 per share, we can see that the current stock is trading at a discount of about 6% below its intrinsic value. Next, when we performed the expected rate of return calculation, we found out that if we were to invest in the security at the current stock price of about $29 per share and hold the security through 2033, we can expect to get a return of about 11.5% on this investment. In conclusion, we can see that AT&T operates in a mature market. It is not in the tech sector where it is bound to have tremendous amount of growth in the future. However, at the same time, we are assured that AT&T's revenue is consistent and will stay consistent and predictable in the future. AT&T does pay out good dividends, and those dividends are secured because the company has positive and stable free cash flows to support those dividend payments. In short, AT&T is a safe, defensive long-term investment, which is trading slightly below its intrinsic value, and Superior North has AT&T in its portfolio. Hey guys, that is all I have for you this week. Hopefully you found this video on AT&T interesting. If you do like this content, please do like, share, comment, and subscribe. And if you have any suggestions as to which stock I should review next, please leave it in the comment section below. I will greatly appreciate it. Thank you.